we're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, the 4th canto, the 24th chapter, the 54th verse. The title of the chapter is Chanting the Song Sung by the Lord of Shiva. Bhavan Bhakti Mata, Bhavan Bhakti Mata Labhyo,
Bhavan Bhakti Mata Labhyo,
Durava Sarva Dehinam,
Durava Sarva Dehinam. Bhavan Bhakti Mata Labhyo, Durlabha Sarva Dehinam, Swarajyasya Vyabhimata, Ekante Natma Vishyati, Bhavan Bhakti Mata Labhyo, Svarajasya Vyabhimata, Ekante Natma Vidyate,
Bhavan Bhakti Mata Labhyo,
Bhavan Bhakti Mata Labhyo,
Durlabha Sarva Dehinam,
Durlabha Sarva Dehinam,
Svarajasya Vyabhimata,
Svarajasya Vyabhimata,
Bhavan,
Your grace,
Bhakti Mata,
by the devotees,
Labhya, obtainable,
Durlabha,
very difficult to be obtained,
Sarvadehinam,
of all other living entities.
Svarajasya.
Of the King of Heaven.
Api.
Even.
Abhimata.
The ultimate goal.
Ekantena.
By oneness.
Atmavit.
Of the self realized.
Gati.
The ultimate destination. Translation. My dear Lord, the King in charge of the heavenly kingdom is also desirous of obtaining the ultimate goal of life, devotional service. Similarly, you are the ultimate destination of those who identify themselves with you, Aham Brahmasmi. However, it is very difficult for them to attain you, whereas a devotee can very easily attain your lordship. As stated in Brahma Samhita, Vedesha Dhulabham Adhulabham Atma Bhaktam. This indicates that it is very difficult for one to attain the ultimate goal of life and reach the ultimate destination by Kuntaloka or Goloka Vrindavan, simply by studying Vedanta philosophy or Vedic literature. However, this highest perfectional stage can be attained by the devotees very easily. That is the meaning of Vedesha Durlabham Adurlabham Atma Bhaktam. The same point is confirmed by Lord Shiva in this verse. The Lord is very difficult for the karma yogis, the jnana yogis, and the jnana yogis to attain. Those who are bhakti yogis, however, have no difficulty at all. In the word Swarajasa, Svar refers to Svargaloka, the heavenly planet, and Swaraja refers to the ruler of the heavenly planet, Indra. Generally, karmic desire elevation to heavenly planets, but King Indra desires to become perfect in bhakti yoga. Those who identify themselves as Aham Brahmasmi, I am the Supreme Brahman, one with the Absolute Truth, also ultimately desire to attain perfect liberation in the Vaikuntha planet. or the Loka Vrindavan. In Bhagavad Gita 18:55, it is said, Bhakti Mama Vijanati Yavanyas Chasmi Tatvatahatato Mam Tatvato Gyatva Vishate Tadanantaram. One can understand the Supreme Personality as He is only by devotional service. And when one is in full consciousness of the Supreme Lord by such devotion, he can enter into the kingdom of God. Thus, if one desires to enter into the spiritual world, he must try to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead by practicing Bhakti Yoga. Simply by practicing Bhakti Yoga, one can understand the Supreme Lord in truth. But without such understanding, one cannot enter into the spiritual kingdom. One may be elevated to the heavenly planets, or may realize himself as Brahman, Aham Brahmasmi, but that is not the end of realization. One must realize the position of the Supreme Personality of Godhead by Bhakti Yoga. Then real perfection of life is attained. So this part of the Bhagavatam is a very strong testimony to the mercy of the devotee. Because first, we begin, it's kind of, it switches itself around, but at the beginning of the chapter, we start to hear about Pachinibari. And we know that Pachinibari is going to hear or be shaken out of his confusion, his materialistic confusion, by the mercy of Narada Muni, in a rather long allegory that takes up quite a bit of this section of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And then, but before that all happens, Pachinibari, he sends his sons, Jetas, to meditate. And he's sending them out to actually perfect themselves so that they can be good householders, because he's been dubbed responsible for procreating the planet. And so that responsibility is shared by his sons, his 10 sons, known as the Pachetas. And being very dedicated and good sons, they hear the instruction of their father very deeply. They take it very seriously. And so they leave, it's described, taking the order of their father on the head, to go and meditate in order to understand how to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which their father tells them is the ultimate goal of human life. And then they also get some mercy, some highly elevating instructions from Lord Shiva. It's described that Lord Shiva, actually from within his heart, was inspired by Krishna to give this Rudra Gita, or this instruction, this song sung by Lord Shiva, to these 10 devotees because of their qualification. So it's very clear that they had a very special qualification, and their qualification was that they took the order of their father, who was their existing spiritual master or their leader, spiritual leader, very much to heart. They were very surrendered. They had a very surrendered attitude. And because of that surrendered attitude, they inspired the Supreme Lord and the Supreme Lord's devotee to give them Krishna consciousness. We see that happening again and again in Vaishnava literature. We saw it in various times with Rahugana, for instance. He was doing his thing, and Judd Bharat became inspired to enlighten him. And he heard immediately. As soon as he heard Judd Bharat speak, he immediately became inspired. Chichiketu, also another great soul, kind of clouded over by ignorance of some kind, and by the mercy of Angira and ultimately Narada Muni, he became clarified, and he was also able to hear. He had to get shaken up a little bit, but then he was able to hear. Dhruva Maharaj, he went out to find material things, but because he had that determination and that willingness to follow his mother's instruction, she also told him, go find Krishna, he's the Lord Vishnu, he's the one who can fulfill your desire. He was also seen as being very receptive to spiritual life in Narada Muni. gave him transcendental instruction, very similar to this instruction in the sense that here's a mantra, if you chant it, it will purify your desire and you will attain self-realization. That was what was known to Narada. So, Prabhupada quotes this verse from the Brahma Samhita. It's an interesting verse because I just want to read the translation. It says, I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, who is inaccessible to the Vedas, but attainable by pure devotional service of the soul. And then it describes Krishna, or it describes what is attainable. It says, who is without a second, who is not subject to decay, who is without beginning, whose form is endless, who is the beginning, and the eternal Purush. So it's a little confusing. It's kind of an Upanishadic kind of description of Krishna. You know, he's inside everything, he's outside of everything, he's the beginning, he's the end, he's big, he's small. And then it says, yet he is a person possessing the beauty of blooming youth. So even though he has all these kind of strange, hard to describe qualities that are beyond the human conception, when we try to think about the greatness of God, we kind of get stymied because God is beyond our capacity to understand. He's limitless, and yet we see that he's having loving relationships with his devotees. He's sitting in his chariot driver for Arjuna. He's having pastimes with cowboy boys. He's, you know, hanging around with Mother Jasoda's chasing him and tying him up with a rope, and he's carrying Nanda Maharaj's shoes on his head. So how do we get that balance, that understanding of these two aspects of Krishna as being unlimited, as being fantastic, as being the beginning of everything and the end of everything, and at the same time having that beautiful, youthful quality that's described so many places. We read about that Krishna is Nagayovanam, he's so beautiful. We hear detailed descriptions of his earrings and his garlands and his hair and his beautiful lotus eyes. So how do we balance those things? And the only way that we can actually understand that aspect of Krishna, that beautiful Somyabhapu, as it's described in the Bhagavad Gita, the only way we can understand that person is by the intervention of the pure devotee. We're not able to understand it any other way. Prabhupada quotes another verse, 1855, Bhakti Mamam Janati, and in that verse also, it's clearly mentioned that without the process of devotional service, and Prabhupada says, without the intervention of a pure devotee, learning from a pure devotee, it's not possible to become self-realized. It's not possible to have a loving relationship with Krishna. It can't be done. And then he makes an interesting statement considering where we are. He says, university degrees will not be helpful in this matter. So, even if we get a BA in Vaishnava theology, if we don't take up the process of Krishna consciousness, we will not be able to go back to Godhead. So then we look at the process of Krishna consciousness. That's described in the 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, right? The process of knowledge. And Prabhupada speaks of, I mean, Krishna speaks of many, many different things that make up the process of knowledge. But Prabhupada highlights a few of them. And he speaks also about one that's being essential, and that's hearing from a pure devotee, taking guidance from a pure devotee. That's essential. But then how do you hear? Well, what is the qualification to hear? And that which is the beginning and end, as Prabhupada describes it, is humility. That you have to have the proper attitude in order to be able to hear from the spiritual other master. Otherwise, the words bounce off you. Like, you know, water off a duck's back, or water off a lotus leaf. It just goes, if you ever saw water on a lotus leaf, it just beads up into little pearl-like droplets and rolls right off. Even if you run a hose full blast onto a lotus leaf, none of the water will stay on the lotus leaf. When you're finished, when you shut the hose, the leaf will be dry. There will be no sign of water. The water has all beads up and just rolls right off. So that's what happens to us if we don't have the qualification to hear. We see that there are people in Vedic literature who heard. They got good advice. Duryodhana got good advice. Dhritarashtra got good advice. Ravana got good advice. Hiranyakashipu got good advice, and they got good advice from very qualified people, right? Vidura, Mahajan, he told Dhritarashtra how many times what you're doing is ridiculous. He told Duryodhana how many times what you're doing is ridiculous. Bhishma, another Mahajan, also gave very good instructions, didn't hear a thing. Didn't hear a thing. Even Krishna came to the assembly and tried to talk some sense into him. Didn't hear anything. Didn't see anything, didn't hear anything. Completely oblivious. Hiranyakashipu, he got instruction from another Mahajan. Prahlad Maharaj also didn't hear anything. Nothing clicked. He couldn't get it. And many, many times we see this even in our own experience where, 50 people will be in a room and 50 people will hear the same class and 50 people will maybe even get the same book or give them out, and maybe one person will be enthused to inquire more, to understand Samaha Masudurva, such a great soul, is very, very rare. So this process of Krishna consciousness, it has kind of a three-part, it needs three components. It needs the intervention of a pure devotee. Ultimately, it needs our proper hearing, our proper reciprocation with that pure devotee. And this, when Krishna sees that we are properly receiving the message from a pure devotee and responding to the message with submission and service and an attitude of devotion, then Krishna intervenes. So those three things, Krishna says in the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita that he's sitting within the heart and he destroys with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. He actually removes the gook, the material, a Jewish word comes to my mind, for those of you who might not. Chazara, it's just, I don't know what the English translation is, but it means like all you can imagine, all the material things, the dirt, the crud, all the stuff in the heart, all the anarthas, the material desires that are fixed in our heart like barnacles, you know, stick to a ship at the bottom. You can't get them off. Very difficult. They're adhering. And because of those things fixed in our heart, Krishna can't sit there. We have that nice song, Mama Mana Mandire, that Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he prays, that let my heart become cleansed like it's, so it can be a temple. So it can be beautiful and clean, so that Krishna will be willing to sit there. So we have to undergo the process of devotional service under the guidance of a spiritual master. And Prabhupada says that the first two requirements are humility and pridefulness. That we have to cultivate a humble attitude, which means we don't look for profit, adoration, and distinction. We don't look for power or any kind of material position because of our devotional activity. But and then one may think, well, what's the difference between pridefulness and humility? But if you look through Prabhupada's books, you'll find that he fine-tunes the definition of pridefulness to mean that if something comes your way, if some glorification comes your way, if someone notices that you have some spiritual proclivity or ability, then you don't become attached to that praise or that position. And you don't aspire for that recognition to be the cause of your devotional service. You really don't want that pride or that praise to become the cause of your devotional service. It has to be put passed up. I once asked a long time ago, one very nice devotee, what do you do when you get some kind of recognition because of your position? Maybe someone, you know, chants your name or throws flowers. Because it used to be, it still is actually, that many of my godbrothers and many devotees, they get some kind of recognition because of their nice service and their humble submission to Srila Prabhupada's instruction. But that reciprocation can be very dangerous. You know, it can be very dangerous. It's almost like we look to avoid suffering, because suffering, we obviously know, causes some kind of pain, some kind of difficulty. And yet in the Shastra, we understand many times that suffering brings people to spiritual heights. Right? Queen Kunti prayed for suffering, because when she suffered, she would think of Krishna. Many devotees do that. When we go on, we've talked before, when we go out, we chant the Nishringa prayer. Because we're afraid of some kind of danger, then we take shelter. But we don't think so much that when we're doing well, when someone's patting us on the back, when things are going fine, when people are, you know, praising us and saying how great we are and how nice the class was and how you do this nicely, that we don't think that also I should pray to Krishna, please protect me from this, because this is very, very dangerous, and it kills the tendency for humble service. And if that tendency is killed, then the whole process of devotional service crumbles to the ground. It immediately falls down like a deck of cards, because that humility and that righteousness are the factors which allow us to hear from the pure devotee. They allow us to understand spiritual life. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he said that you can't understand Krishna consciousness until you admit that you don't know everything. So you have to come to the point. I was once talking to Borja Mahabhu. Someone asked him, how do you become humble? And he was saying, just take an honest look at your life, and you'll immediately become humble. So if we actually see how many times we struggle, we fall, we trip, we forget Krishna in a matter of minutes, how many times we forget Krishna, just look at one round. Just look at one round and think, in the course of one round, how many times do you forget Krishna? Or even look at it conversely, how many times do you remember Krishna? Out of 108 beings, you know, I calculated once, 2,700 and something opportunities to say each holy name, how many times do you really hear the holy name? So if you think like this, if you analyze, certainly when I analyze my own attempts at Krishna consciousness, it's very humbling. Very humbling. But when I was a student, we learned a prayer. I don't remember, I'm not a prayer, a poem. But it was kind of a prayer. I don't remember it so well, but I remember the author saying, black is the pit from pole to pole. I thank whatever God may be for my unconquerable soul. Out of the bludgeonings of chance, I have not winced nor cried aloud. Something, my head is bloody but unbowed. So sometimes we get like, right, we're bloody, we're torn, we're ripped up, we're mangled, the material energy punches us and kicks us. It's like a black belt in Taekwondo, you know. And then we get up, but we're still like, one more time, let me just try one more thing, let me enjoy just one more way. And then we can't hear. It becomes so difficult for us to take seriously the process of Krishna consciousness. So in these two stories that were, one that we're kind of almost at the end of, and one that we're about to hear, the pure devotee has taken the time to offer a way of achieving pure devotional service. Seeing some, I mean, especially with Prachini Bhara, you can understand that he was very engrossed in material life. It wasn't like he was... had achieved pure emotional service, because he did achieve the bottom line. But at the same time, he was confused, and yet Narada Muni took the time to craft this amazing allegory to kind of get him out of the muck and help him understand. He also did a very similar thing that he did to Murari, kind of showed him all the animals that he'd been killing and sacrificing, and told him that, you know, these living entities are not going to be very friendly to you in the future. And that gave him a kind of an aha moment. And here also, because of the purity of these prachetas, because of their surrendered attitude, Lord Shiva is giving them very potent transcendental knowledge. Actually, at the end of this chapter, we'll see very clearly the glories of remembering these prayers or chanting these prayers or thinking about these prayers. Lord Shiva's song is actually divided into three sections. And we're in the last section, just starting the last section. The last section starts with the 53rd verse, the 54th verse. But at the beginning, for the first 10 or so verses, 33 to 43, Lord Shiva he's giving the prajetas prayers, obeisances to Krishna, realizing the greatness of the Supreme Lord, kind of inspiring them with in their heart the realization that of the goal, how great the goal is that they're going for. And then the next verses, which are the next eight verses, Lord Shiva describes the goal so that we don't become confused. Because it may be that we think, like Prabhupada is speaking here, that we may confuse it, we may think, well, maybe I should merge. Maybe that's the goal. Or maybe I should acquire mystic cities, or maybe I should meditate and see the Lord within my heart. But the prajetas Lord Shiva doesn't want the prajetas to become confused. So for the next eight verses, he describes the Supreme Personality of Godhead in great detail. And then in the last section, which is the one we're in now, which continues up to 59, six verses, Lord Shiva is telling them how to achieve this goal by the process of pure devotional service, so that they know what to do. And when they hear, they're so inspired and so enlivened by the instructions of Lord Shiva that they begin to carry out his instructions very carefully. So if we also become enlivened and inspired by the instructions of the spiritual master, that will become manifest in action. Prabhupada was a propounder of practical, active, devotional service. He didn't want us to just become bhajananandis. He spoke against it quite strongly many times. He wanted us to put our devotional sentiment into practice by spreading Krishna consciousness, giving it to others, by expanding the Hare Krishna movement in whatever way we could, by putting our wheel, our shoulder to the wheel. Prabhupada used to use the analogy of the Indian railway, that there was a sign that said, keep the wheels turning, and that we all should somehow or other contribute to keep the wheels turning. And one of the things about the Hare Krishna movement is that in order for it to go forward, it takes everybody. It takes all of us working together. So this process of devotional service is active. We have to find out what it is that we can do for Krishna, and then we have to do it. We have to put our complete focus on it. Now, we have to be prepared to do it. Just like here, we see the Pajayas. They had a job to do. Their father, who was also their spiritual guide, he told them, you need to prepare yourself for a very opulent grihastha life, which it could be very dangerous for you. You're going to get married, you're going to have children, you're going to be kings, you're going to be rulers, you're going to be living in a very opulent situation. It could very easily be mesmerizing. So therefore, go and perform austerities and become renounced, become fixed in your devotional practice, so that you can go into that situation and not be disturbed by it. So that you can act in the material world and not be hurt by it, not be destroyed by it, not be crushed by it. So that's what they did. And now Lord Shiva is giving them the tools to achieve spiritual perfection. And we'll find that they actually take that instruction very seriously, and they do achieve spiritual perfection. And we also can take Srila Prabhupada's order and the order of the great acharyas very seriously, and we also can achieve spiritual perfection if we can maintain that humble attitude and keep hearing the order of the spiritual master. So I'll stop there and ask if there's any questions. Yes.
You were starting something that you asked one senior devotee how he's dealing with this.
Sorry. What he told, sorry about that. What he said was that you have to pass it up. That if someone gives you any kind of praise, you understand that it has nothing to do with you. You're not the doer. It's not your skill. You have to pass it up to the cyclic succession. And constantly realize that there's nothing that you do, nothing that you say that's yours. It's all coming from Krishna, it's all coming from the scripture, it's all coming from the spiritual master. So who are you to take any kind of credit for it? Therefore, you should pass it up. And by passing it up with disciplined succession, you don't become damaged by it. It doesn't cause you to develop false pride, which will cause you downfall. Thank you for that. Anybody else? Yes?
They said that praises are required to be joyful and then criticism is also required to be humble.
Mm-hmm.
So, in what way, when somebody praises that? And they said that if you just pass it off to the subconscious and ignite it for oneself, then I have to feel joyful.
We become joyful in seeing Prabhupada smile, in understanding that we made an effort to please the spiritual master. And by that effort, the spiritual master is pleased and become satisfied in knowing that he's pleased by our effort. We may not become successful. We have no right to the fruit, but we have a right to attempt to do the best we can and as an offering to Krishna. And so we make that effort. And we hear some whatever, and we may become joyful on some level. But if we take it to be our own power, by our own strength, by our own power, then our joy will be very short-lived. If we want eternal joy, if we want ultimate happiness, we have to get that from a different source. That comes from understanding our loving relationship with Krishna and our position as being a servant of Krishna. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said our flatterer is our enemy. And of course there's a difference between flattery and sincere praise. That's another thing also. Is that if we do something, if we make an effort to serve the devotees, and the devotees are pleased by our service, that's very nice. We're happy if we become joyful, if the devotees are pleased with our service. We're happy because they're pleased. And we hear of their pleasure in their sincere gratitude. But that doesn't necessarily mean that we have to take it on ourselves that, well, it's because of me that I made them pleased. But I did some service and they were pleased and I'm grateful that they're pleased. So I feel joyful that they're pleased. And at the same time, when the devotees guide us in ways that may not be so comfortable, because we hear things sometimes that are not necessarily pleasant to hear. The false ego doesn't like to hear those things. But the devotee becomes joyful then also. Because he sees that that is leading us closer to Krishna. I think I mentioned here before, there's a very nice story about this Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, that there was one person harassing him. And we see it also with Gohula Chapala and others who tried to harass the Chaitanya, who were great devotees of Krishna. And those people, in this particular story about the Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, actually saw it as an opportunity that Krishna was giving him information about what he needed to work on. And his disciples were very disturbed by it, but he was very pleased by it. He was very grateful for it. Because it came in a way which was, I mean, was painful for his disciples to hear it. It wasn't done with very good intention. But because his intention was good, he was able to hear it in a way that it moves him forward in devotional service. And he even said it. He was sent by Krishna to give me, to tell me those areas of my spiritual life in which I need improvement. And now he's gone. Who of you will do that for me? So we find that. I was just discussing that yesterday with Vishaka, that sometimes we know what the right thing is. We see somebody doing something maybe not right, but we don't feel comfortable necessarily giving them guidance or saying anything to them. Well, somebody wrote me the other day that because we're looking, this is a plug, we're looking for a number of men to go to Mumbai and work with David Dinamani Prabhu to collect funds for various projects that the GBC and ISKCON wants to engage in. So we're, you know, various members of our movement, senior members of our movement, are looking to see who can do this service, who is willing to go for some time and work on the tutelage of David Dinamani Prabhu and learn how to collect funds. So someone was telling me they approached somebody, a brahmachari, and they asked him, and he said, no, that's not what I want to do really, but I want to go to Mayapur, and I'm just going to go to Mayapur and hear and chant and study. And I said, well, you know, when Prabhupada said, go here, go there, it wasn't like, well, you know, I want to do this or I want to do that. He would, you know, give us a little push, and we would go places where we had no idea to go and do things that we had no idea to do, how we were going to do them. We didn't have, but because of Prabhupada's instruction, because of the impetus of Prabhupada's instruction, we were empowered to do things that we didn't have any interest in doing, so to speak. And so the mention was, well, that's not really brahmachari. He said he's not really initiated and he doesn't really have a spiritual master to guide him, he just kind of does what he wants. I said, well, that's not really a brahmachari. Maybe he's wearing saffron, but he's not a brahmachari. Because brahmachari is someone who lives in the ashram of the spiritual master and is a surrendered soul. He just does what the spiritual master orders. But who will tell him? Who will tell him you're not really, you know, that's really not the best way to go forward in your spiritual life? Nobody. Because we just don't feel comfortable. So the rare soul is the Rahugana, is the Jadvara who talks to Rahugana, or the Nara who approaches Dhruva, and even when they say, I don't want to hear, don't tell me, then he said, no, I have to tell you, you have to hear. Pajini Bhari, he hears from Narada. Narada doesn't ask him, do you want to hear? He tells him, and he tells Vidura comes back to tell Dhritarashtra, he tells him in no compromised terms, you have to get your life together, you know. So it's a rare soul that can actually administer that kind of information that we may not want to hear. And for the devotee, it makes him joyful, equally joyful. Maybe more joyful.
Yes, yeah, sometimes in life with kindness, if you're kind to people, you can get anything in this world. And in Sankirtan, for example, sometimes I used to pray Karmis, and I say, oh, you're very intelligent. And I listen to them, you know, and I say, oh, you're very intelligent, you're really very intelligent. This book will make you more intelligent. And the people, you know, they like this. They like sometimes to hear about this praise.
Prabhupada used to tell us, praise, my dear sir, you're very kind, you're very intelligent, I can see that you're... But forget everything and just take up this process of Krishna consciousness. You forget everything that you know and just take up this process of Krishna consciousness. So sometimes the spoonful of sugar helps the medicine go down.
Yeah.
But sometimes Prabhupada puts sugar and sometimes he lets the sugar out.
Yeah, sometimes we see the temple, bhaktas are coming and sometimes it's very difficult when, in the beginning of spiritual life, right? If you're encouraged and you say, oh, you're doing good, you're very strong, you wake up like this, you go ahead.
It's true.
Give the same. Yeah.
We have to find expert ways of moving people along in spiritual life. So every devotee has to look at the people that they're talking to and see the best way. Narada Muni used one method for speaking to Pachini Bhari. What should you use a different method for speaking to Chaitas? We see so many different methods in throughout the Bhagavatam of different devotees who use different techniques, right?
Mm-hmm.
Killing babies and bringing them back to life, and killing animals and bringing them back to life, and many different techniques for getting people to remember who they are and what the goal of life is. So we as devotees have to become expert. Prabhupada was very expert in, you know, Sunday feasts and so many different techniques. He used Golabjimans, you know, so many different techniques that he used, simply wonderful, to get us to remember Krishna. And so we also have to do it, to find a way. I was just in New Zealand. I was in Devamrita's. Maharaj has these yoga centers, several of them, in Wellington. I was in also in Auckland. And these places are amazing. You know, completely, they're quite focused on one group of people. They preach to a certain niche. They have a certain niche that they target. But they do it in a very expert way. It's very calculated. So they have these yoga centers, and then they have Bhagavad Gita classes, but they're couched in a terminology which is attractive to people who are, you know, psychology of the self and blah, blah, blah. And they have, you know, nice dinner, and people come, have a yoga class, have this nice dinner, and then people sit and talk with you, and you look like an intelligent person. Maybe you'd be interested in knowing about the yoga texts from which all these exercises come from and what their goal is. And gradually they bring people to come, and they bring many people to this process. But it's very gentle, you know. The movement forward is very incremental. Anybody else? Okay, thank you very much. All glories to Shri Prabhupada.